Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 284. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about cathedrals and ancient stone circles as we go to Wiltshire in England and to Stonehenge. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have some news stories for you. The first one was an interesting article from Travel Mole, and it talks about Southwest Airlines, and it's not the airline you once thought it was. For those of you in the United States, you may know that Southwest is known as the low price leader, and it still is the low price leader in some markets, in about 11 markets of the 24 that were surveyed. The one thing that's interesting, though, is the average ticket price for Southwest over the last 5 years have gone up 39%, while other airlines have only gone up 10%. So the moral of the story here is, next time you fly, don't assume you know who has the lowest prices, but check. And then in the news of the strange, a contortionist managed to steal from travelers' luggage by packing himself in a suitcase and having himself put on with all the other luggage, and then he got out on the luggage bus and started stealing from people's suitcases. This happened in Spain, and the contortionist was from Poland. And then in interesting news, I think many of us assumed that Egypt is a place where everything that's going to be discovered has probably been discovered, but relatively recently, Egyptologists discovered 17 new pyramids. Now, these aren't going to be pyramids the size of the Great Pyramid, but there are over 100 pyramids known in Egypt, many of them small funerary pyramids, and using some satellite technology, they found 17 more. For links to all of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com.
I'd like to welcome to the show Keith Kellett, who's coming to us from Amesbury, England, and come to talk to us about that region of England, the region around Salisbury. Keith, welcome to the show.
Hi, glad to be here.
So first of all, I'm not sure that everybody knows where we're talking about. I suspect they've heard of at least one well-known monument in the area where you are.
Oh, indeed. I mean, everybody's heard of Stonehenge. I spend a lot of time sort of showing people around who have come to visit, who I've met on the web, and want to see the stones. In fact, there's a lady from Canada coming next week.
Awesome. And so where are we in England, for people who can't picture that on a map?
It's not quite the West Country. If you know the Isle of Wight, big island off the south coast, and go about 20 miles north of there, that's where we are.
Okay. And for practical traveling, I found it was about 1 hour on a high-speed train out of London, so not that hard to get to. We actually did it as a day trip, and so very easy to get to region of England.
Well, Salisbury is easy to get to on the train.
Right.
But Amesbury does not have a railway station, and it's rather difficult. You can get to Stonehenge. There isn't a regular bus service, but there is a special bus service leaves Salisbury station called the Stonehenge Tour.
I think that's what we did, is we did a tour out there. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's right. A lot of people ask me, is there a tour which takes in both Stonehenge and Avebury? And no, there is a special coach. It's called the Stonehenge Tour, leaves from Salisbury bus station or the railway station, and takes in the castle at Old Sarum and Stonehenge, but doesn't go to Avebury. The only tour I know of that takes in both monuments starts in Bath, which is about 40 miles away.
Okay. So, first of all, why should someone go? Not just Stonehenge, but what else is there to see in the area?
Well, before you leave Salisbury, I would advise a call at the Salisbury Museum if you really want to find out about Stonehenge, what it's all about. And Salisbury Museum is in the Cathedral Close, which is sort of enclosed area, which, of course, contains a cathedral.
Uh-huh.
A lovely old Gothic cathedral, which a lot of people really come to Salisbury to see, especially the coach parties. Now, the museum is what used to be called the King's House, which is in the Cathedral Close.
Mm-hmm.
And that is recommended by no less a person than Bill Bryson. If I remember rightly, he said in Notes from a Small Island, he said something like, Salisbury Museum is outstanding, and I advise you to go there at once.
All right. And what are we going to learn about Stonehenge? What do we know about it? I mean, we know it's a lot of big stones, and it's in a circle, and it's a sort of calendar.
Well, we used to have a saying that the known facts about Stonehenge could be typed on a sheet of A4 paper, and everything else is theory and conjecture.
Right.
But the thing about Stonehenge is, on the longest day of the year, which is in less than a month's time, when the sun rises, it will be in direct line with the avenue, which is a sort of pair of ditches that used to lead up to the stone circle.
Uh-huh.
It will also line up with a stone they call the heel stone.
Uh-huh.
And that's when all these sort of druids and New Agers and goodness knows how much, yeah, sort of gather at Stonehenge and generally have a party. It's the same at the winter solstice, which is the 22nd of December, which I know very well because it's my daughter's birthday. And then the setting sun, again, is in a direct line with the stones in Stonehenge.
Now, I've seen pictures of Stonehenge and I've seen video, and clearly they show me that Stonehenge is out on the middle of a plain and there's no one around it for miles, right?
Well, yeah, that's what I try to show when I take pictures of it. But the sad fact is that it is right at a busy road junction. One of the roads is the A303, the main Exeter road, which runs about 200 metres from the stones. And the other one is the A344, which branches off from that and goes on the other side of the stones. Now, there are plans to close that divide, A344 road, and put the visitor centre about a mile away. And the only access to the stones will be on foot.
Interesting.
Or on a specially designed land train from the visitor center to the stones.
Now, currently, they did at least bury the visitor center so that it isn't that obvious, but obviously there's a coach park with lots and lots of tour buses, and when you're taking pictures of the stones and not showing tourists, you're doing it through incredible timing, waiting for this many, many visitors to walk behind the stones.
Well, I've got some nice ones, which I will email to you in due course, which I took in the blizzard 2 years ago. And I think that was the only time in about 10 years that the staff at Stonehenge outnumbered the visitors.
I can picture that. And you say that what we know about Stonehenge can fit on an A4 piece of paper. Are there other things that we know about it? We know it's old.
Yeah, well, they talk about the effort to actually get the stones there.
Right.
The inner circle is made of bluestone, which is found only in the Preseli Hills in Wales. The tall stones, the sarsens they're called, they were brought 30 miles from Lockeridge down. And they've reacted how they got them there several times. I think what it proved was there was an influential organized society in those days. A lot of people thought they didn't have it. And you would never get that number of people required together. You'd never get the organization in place. And a lot of people thought that, they were brought here by magic, the Archbishop Merlin was behind it. Or possibly some say that passing extraterrestrials lent a hand. The blue stones, that is the small stones in the inner circle, came from the Preseli Hills in Wales. The big stones, they're called the Sarsens, came from Lockeridge Down, which is about 30 miles away. Now, it must have taken an organized society with an influential leadership to actually organize bringing the stones to Stonehenge. It can be done because they've reenacted them a couple of times with some success.
Now, it would have been tough for Merlin, too, because if there was a Merlin, because there may have been an Arthur, he would have been sometime around 400 AD, and we're talking about stones that were erected sometime around 2500 BC, so something like 4,500 years ago.
Oh, yes, when John Aubrey, who was a historian in the time of Charles II, came to catalogue them, he came out and stated as a fact, they were brought here by the Druids. Now, the stones long predate the Druids, but people have sort of cottoned onto this, and it's taken a real long time to persuade people that, no, the stones had nothing to do with the Druids.
But they certainly are associated with them now. Is there anything else we want to talk about Stonehenge? Any other tricks besides going to Stonehenge in a blizzard?
Well, there's an awful lot more to Stonehenge than just the stone circle. I did do some interviews and made some video about the what they call the Stonehenge, the Riverside Project. Now, what this was it was a big excavation and showed that Stonehenge was just part of a complex that covered the whole area. You get the avenue, which I've already mentioned, which leads up from the River Avon. You've got the Cursus, which is so-called because they thought when they first saw it was a horse racing circuit. Well, it's nothing of the sort. You've got the Cuckoo Stone. You've got, about a mile away, is another stone circle called Woodhenge. Now, this was only discovered in 1926 when a pilot flew over it and noticed the dark circles in the ground where the wooden posts that made it up had rotted away and fertilized the ground a bit more.
Huh.
There's nothing there to see apart from concrete posts that they put up to show where the wooden posts used to be.
Interesting.
I did do some video in it. I did get a sound interview with Dr. Megan Price, who was one of the scientists on the dig. But it will take a while before they evaluate everything they found there.
Well, and you were mentioning earlier, if we look at Stonehenge, Stonehenge now is a UNESCO World Heritage Site, but it's not just Stonehenge. It's Stonehenge and then the other stone circle that you mentioned, Avebury, which, as I recall, predates Stonehenge.
I believe it does. I haven't got the exact dates to hand, but yes, I think the stone circle at Avebury does predate Stonehenge. In fact, it's a whole series of circles. There's a big outer circle, two inner circles, and a visible avenue of stones. And the ditch, well, I mean, you look at that ditch, you think, well, they dug this out with, you know, antler head picks and primitive tools. I believe an engineer calculated that it would take a man with a mechanical digger 3 years to dig that out.
Oh, my. And actually, one of the things, Stonehenge is of the two more interesting, more majestic, I would say, in terms of scale, but Avebury also is less visited. So it is one of those places where you can kind of wander around and feel a little less like you're in the midst of the tourist crowd.
Oh, indeed you can, because Stonehenge, you've got the little man at the gate sort of collecting your entrance money. At Avebury, you can just wander around the circles. You do have to pay for the car park, but the entrance to the circle is free.
Okay.
In fact, there is a little village smack dab in the middle of the circle.
And so we're talking about a region of England where people have lived for at least 4,500 years. And I think studies show that people have lived there since the end of the last ice age, at least. So we're talking about an area with history upon history upon history. So once we're kind of done with stone circles, what else would you recommend we see?
Well, just a short distance from Avebury is what they call the West Kennet Long Barrow. It's a burial site that you can actually go inside the burial chamber. Of course, the bodies are long gone. And this stands on top of the hill. And you can actually go inside the burial chamber and see what it was like in those days.
Interesting. I was very close to that, and I didn't get to that.
From there, of course, on the other side of the main A4 road is Silbury Hill, which is said to be the tallest man-made mound in the world. And nobody knows its exact purpose, but the old A4, the old Bristol Road, runs right by the foot of it. And it is based on an old Roman road. And characteristically, the Romans actually swerved to avoid the hill rather than build a straight road like they usually do.
Okay. And where should we go next?
Well, you could have a look at the Kennet and Avon Canal.
Okay.
It was a fairly short-lived one. It was one of the later canals. What it was a way of getting sailing from London to Bristol without having to go around Land's End and the Lizard.
Okay. So we're talking industrial age.
Yes, that's right. It was reopened by the Queen in 1990. What it was a very short-lived canal because I think it had only been running about 20 years when the railway almost paralleled it and, of course, took most of the trade away.
Huh. Now, you say reopened. It's reopened, I assume, more for sightseeing these days than for industrial uses.
Oh, yes, that's right. It sees hardly any industrial use because what happened was, I think a lot of canals fell into disuse after the war.
Uh-huh.
And it was only the work of a man called Tom Rolt, who was instrumental in getting them reopened again for leisure use.
And so we'd find the sort of canal boats that we find on the Regent's Canal in London in that area?
Yeah, the narrowboat it's called.
The narrowboat, okay.
A very long narrowboat because obviously they needed to cut the canals and build the locks on as narrow a gauge as possible.
Interesting. Sometime in my future, and I suspect it's after I retire, there is a canal tour of England in my future or of England and France, because there are these hidden canals that I think most people don't even notice when they drive by that are an interesting part of England's history, and it's interesting that they're being reopened.
Oh, yes. In fact, I was going to visit a friend. It's a place I hadn't been before. And I was driving there, and all of a sudden I hit a humpback bridge. I really hit it because I was driving much too fast. And I thought, now hang on, why is there a humpback bridge here? Well, the reason of a humpback bridge is, of course, so the boats can pass under it.
Right.
And so I stopped the car, got out and had a look, and sure enough, there was a disused canal there.
Huh.
I didn't know about that one at all.
The ones that are amazing to me are the ones that actually stand up, you know, where they're passing through a valley, and they built basically trusses almost like a large aqueduct.
Aqueduct, yes. There's a very famous one up in Wales, the Ponts. One of these strange Welsh unpronounceable names.
I understand. But,
There is an interesting thing on the Kennet and Avon called the Wilcott Wide Water. What happened was when Mr. Rennie was digging his canal and he needed to pass through the ground owned by a Susanna Lady Rawton, she said, "You may, provided that you make me a lake and build me a nice bridge. You know, not one of your horrible vulgar brick bridges, but a nice bridge over your canal." That's supposed to be the only feature like that in England.
Interesting. Getting back to the Salisbury Plain here, what's going to surprise me when I come to this part of England?
I'll need to think about that and get back to you on it.
Okay.
Well, you could come to Amesbury and have a look around the Solstice Park. It's a business park, which is just in the process of being built. But what they're doing is putting up a series of metal sculptures, which you may find interesting. There's one called the Dragonfly, which is converted from an old helicopter.
Okay.
There's one called the Ancestor, which is standing outside the Holiday Inn at the moment. It sort of shows this old brutish, rather Neanderthal-looking character, all done in bronze, I think, sort of kneeling down and facing the rising sun with his arms in the air. And at the moment, they're looking to actually buy that from the sculptors and put it somewhere permanent, make it a sort of West Country equivalent of the Angel of the North, if you like. We've got a sculpture called the Mallow, which is based on a wild flower that grows around here, but it's about 20 feet high.
Huh. Now, we talk about this area and we say people have lived there for, oh, let's say 10,000 years. But, of course, people still live there today.
Oh,
if I want to get a chance to meet and interact with locals in the area, what's the best way for me as an outsider to do that?
Go to the pub.
Why did I know in England that that was going to be the answer? Okay. When you say go to the pub, I think a lot of people in the U.S. think pub, they think just bar. But what is a pub?
Well, a lot of the country pubs really can't make a living by selling drink alone. They've got to sell food as well. So most of them, you will find a restaurant combined with the bar.
Okay. And this is the public house where people usually meet. Do you have a favorite in the area or a couple favorites?
I like the Wheat Sheaf, which is one of the Durnfords. I can't remember which one there are.
The Wheat Sheaf, you say?
Wheat Sheaf.
Okay.
It's in one of the, I can't remember the name of the village now. The chef there boasts that all his food comes from places within a 30-mile radius of the pub.
Ah, okay. Okay.
And I know I did joke once and say, well, look, what about the orange juice? He said, well, we bought it from the local supermarket.
I believe that would be cheating at that point.
Yeah, well, we've got to have orange juice, and we don't grow oranges in England.
Not so much. What's the best day of the year to come to that region? We talked about if I was a druid, we know what day it is, that it's the solstice. Indeed. Assuming I'm not a druid.
I don't think there's a particular time of year, really.
Okay.
Because, obviously, you can go to the cathedral or see Stonehenge, whatever the weather. Tell you what, and Old Sarum, we haven't talked a lot about Old Sarum.
And I'm interested in hearing more about Old Sarum. One of my favorite books, historical novels about the area, is a book called Sarum.
Oh, Edward Rutherford.
By Edward Rutherford.
Yes.
Fantastic book that follows the history of the people there through a series of families from the close of the Ice Age until modern times. And the name of the book is Sarum, which is the oldest name for what is now Salisbury.
In actual fact, the Romans called it Sorvio Dunum.
Okay.
Sarum is how the Bishop of Salisbury signs his name. But what it was is Old Sarum, the castle, is the original site of the city of Salisbury. And the story goes that it got a bit crowded on that hilltop, and the castle garrison were always falling out with the citizens of Salisbury. You can still see the foundations of the old cathedral there. So what happened was that the Bishop of Salisbury was a man called Odo, and he commanded one of the archers to go up on the battlements of the castle and shoot an arrow, and he would build the new cathedral where the arrow landed. Unfortunately, he hit a deer. He didn't kill it. The deer ran away, ran for about 2 miles, until it fell down and died in possibly the worst possible place you could think of to build a city, the confluence of five rivers. Now, what they did was they dug canals. In fact, some of the streets are still called after the canals. The main example is New Canal. You can't see the canal. It's underground now. But someone in the, I think it's 17th or 18th century, described Salisbury as like a little Venice.
Interesting.
But the city itself is all laid out in straight lines and squares around the cathedral close, and it is probably one of the first planned cities in Europe. The streets are all straight lines, and they include squared-off sections called checkers.
Checker like checkerboard?
Yes, like checkerboard, okay. Except we spell it Q-U-E.
Of course you do.
In fact, that's an issue I've been meaning to take up. You see, you've got these frown tourist signs pointing the way to Salisbury. Salisbury, medieval city. The thing is, medieval is spelt the American way. The English way has an A in it.
You know, I've never really been able to spell well in English, but my defense has always been this language was screwed up well before I came along, so.
Oh, indeed. In fact, my latest blog entry is about the Barrow Monument, where it was erected in the 19th century to honor the second Secretary of Admiralty, Sir John Barrow. The thing is, they're spelled honor the American way, without a U. And it's possible that in those days, nobody really gave a damn anyway about the spelling, as long as it sounded right.
Interesting. If I look at my guidebook when I come to that area, what are they going to recommend that I do that you think is a waste of time?
I can't think of anything, really. Trying to get coach parties coming to see Stonehenge to come and see Amesbury. And I said, well, why? There's nothing here. There's nothing that would be of interest to an outsider anyway. Henry VIII pulled the abbey down and never rebuilt it.
Okay.
And that's about it, really.
Okay. And then what do they miss? You mentioned, for instance, Old Sarum. We didn't get into much detail. What's left to see in Old Sarum?
Well, you get to see the foundations of the old cathedral, The original earthwork, and more or less the outline of the castle wall.
Okay. And this is a castle from the, you know, there's so many people who passed through this area, from the British?
Yes, it started by the ancient British.
By the Britons, okay.
Yeah. Then I think that when the Normans came, it was a wooden castle, and I think they started building stone castles around about the 12th century. I don't think it kind of stayed up very long before they sort of moved everything out to the present site.
As we go to start to wind this down, where do you go in that area and say, thank God I live here?
I was going to answer Woodworth Brewery.
That's probably an honest answer. Okay.
Because Woodworth Brewery is in Devizes, and they actually deliver the beer in the town by a horse-drawn dray still. Apparently, the custom of using the horse-drawn dray, or going back to the horse-drawn dray, started with a brewery driver who lost his license and didn't want to lose his job, so borrowed a draft horse from his father. He used that to deliver the beer.
Oh, that's funny.
Ever since then, Woodworths have used the dray.
And that reminds me of one typical question I ask is, one thing that you see and you laugh and you say, only in Salisbury?
Well, I think there was that signpost they put up recently. It sort of pointed the direction in the distance to the two towns that twinned with, Xanten in Germany and Saintes in France, and also two other places called Salisbury in the United States. But I thought, well, they've completely ignored Salisbury in Australia. I mean, I used to live there. And have completely ignored it. Yeah, I can't really think of anything more.
Okay. Is there anything else you think people should know before they start planning their next trip to come to this region of England?
No, I don't think so. Just read the guidebook. Oh, and there's one thing I will say. If I can put in a plug for the local bus company, the Wilson Dorset Bus Company, you can get runabout tickets, which I think is the cheapest way to get about. But depending on how long you want it for, for instance, if you were staying in Bournemouth, you wanted to come up to Salisbury and have a run round. Last time I bought one, the runabout ticket was a fiver. The bus fare was about £6. So you're making a saving straight away.
Okay. Last two questions.
Yep.
Finish this sentence for me. You really know you're in, and I say this region of England, we're in Wiltshire, aren't we?
Yeah.
Okay. You really know you're in Wiltshire when what?
Well, I suppose when you see so many soldiers and so much chalk.
And so much chalk.
Chalk, yes. That's another feature I forgot to mention was the hill carvings, the white horses and the badgers carved on the side of the hill.
I'd forgotten all about that. And where are those?
At Codford, there is an Australian Infantry Force cap badge. Just over the hill from me at Beaufort is the Kiwi, carved by the New Zealand Forces in the First World War.
Okay.
At Fovant, there are the regimental badges, the badges of the various regiments stationed at an army camp that used to be there, carved into the hillside. And the white horses, there's one at Alton Bones, one at Pusey, there's one at Churhill, which you can see from the A4, the old Bristol Road. There's the famous white horse at Eddington, and they just cut one to commemorate the millennium at Devizes.
Okay.
And I've just remembered, the place I like to go in Wiltshire, you'll probably feed this in somewhere, there's a big dike running across the downs called the Wands Dike. It's an old earthwork which was built back in the Bronze Age. Just a ditch and a wall. You walk along it, just above the Alton Barnes White Horse, in fact, and you'll come to Milk Hill, which is the highest point in Wiltshire. And there you can sort of just look along the Vale of Pusey. You can see Salisbury Plain, and you've got all sorts of wildflowers, orchids, goodness knows what all. And that, I think, is the place.
Excellent. Final question. If you had to summarize this area, Wiltshire, in three words, what three words would you use?
It's not my three words, but you've heard the saying of different as chalk and cheese.
Okay.
That is a Wiltshire saying, actually. You see, generally you get two kinds of soil in Wiltshire. You get the chalk downland,
okay,
which was where they used to pasture their sheep. And you also got the richer lower ground where they grazed the cattle,
okay,
from which they got the milk to make the cheese. So you've got two different lifestyles, as different as chalk and cheese. So the two words to sum up Wiltshire are, of course, chalk and cheese.
Excellent. Keith, thanks so much for coming on the show. Where can people read more about your travel writing?
You can visit my blog, which is travelrat.wordpress.com.
Excellent. We'll put a link to that in the show notes at Amateur Traveler. Keith, thanks so much for coming and telling us about your home area of England.
Okay, no problem. Glad to be of service.
In news of the community, I wanted to thank everyone who came out to the This Week in Travel Amateur Traveler Meetup yesterday here in British Columbia, Vancouver. I'm up here for the TBEX Travel Blog Exchange Conference and having a wonderful time. Special note would go out to Jerry, who is from Canada Parks, who has listened to the Amateur Traveler since episode 20, and to Alan, who wrote the very first of the many glowing reviews that have been written about the Amateur Traveler on iTunes. Thanks to both of you, especially for showing up. And then thanks to all the people who were our guests on a live episode of This Week in Travel. If you listen to that show, that episode should be coming out shortly, probably just before this episode of the Amateur Traveler comes out. I need to get ready to go down to the conference, so we're going to end this episode here. If you have any questions, feel free to leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com or drop me an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter @Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening.